to talk about night two of the NBA draft. Two new Cavaliers. We welcome on. The man has many, many jobs. He used to work with us here on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. You also know him for the Cavs on SI. You know him from Babcock Hoops. You know him from Close Up 360. He's a gentleman. He's a scholar. He's Spencer Davey. Well, welcome to the show, buddy.
What's up, Nick?
Oh, wow. Well, that's all you got for me?
I didn't say anything. Hi, Spencer. How are you?
Hey, JP.
I really felt like I gave you this huge buildup. Hi, Nick. Okay, that's it.
Hell of an intro.
Oh, now we landed the plane.
Silly me. I was like, oh, he didn't say hi, Jonathan, so I thought you were concerned about me for a second there.
No, that too.
Okay, yeah. Definitely that.
That too. We were both
definitely
very that. Concerned here. Yes. So I don't know if you heard, but we got into a conversation in the previous segment about how there's this concern about the American interest in the NBA because of the influx of international talent. I view it differently. Do you think that having this many Euros as the face, or international players in general, is as the faces of your league, is that something that might disrupt the American interest in the NBA, do you think?
Maybe a little bit, but look, man, I mean, I like to see the game played the way that it is internationally. It's faster, it's more up-tempo, there's a lot more passing, and I think that you have this melting pot in the NBA between what people do here in the States. And, you know, you have the flash, you have the sizzle to it. And then you also kind of combine them into being teammates with players from overseas who may be playing a little bit more finesse style, a little bit more of your run and gun. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I think it's just kind of a combination of two styles. And it's almost like EuroLeague on steroids, to be honest.
Yeah, my way of it is, like, it doesn't really matter if you're European, doesn't matter any of that stuff, just matters if we get exposed to you is all I really care about. Like, part of the reason why I think the G League doesn't work in so many ways, obviously the coaching isn't as good as the college game, but it doesn't work because the fans don't get to know these guys in the G League at all, and then they pop up, and it's like, hey, you could be from down the street, and I don't know who you are.
Yeah, no, and that's what's tough, and I think that equally, when it comes to international prospects, not like you've got Liga A on your TV, or you have any type of Virtus Bologna on the screen across from you. You just kind of surfing around, and you don't really catch too much of that unless you're like a really diehard fan who's, you know, scrolling around Twitter and finding highlights from VTB or your highlights from even the NBL in Australia and the BAL in Africa. Like, these are guys that are being developed over in time again, because the NBA has partnerships with a lot of these guys and a lot of these organizations overseas. Starts with Basketball Without Borders, and you look into the NBA Academy, and that's the kind of stuff that it's got a global reach. And that doesn't say that the development here is bad by any means. It's just that it's expanded. And I think that it's harder for the general audience to connect to that because they're not seeing it in front of their eyes. Like we used to see in college, a lot of guys would stay longer at one school, and you'd be able to kind of grow with them as they would develop, and you would see it happen in front of your eyes. You don't see that as much now in college. You see a lot of school hopping. NIL is obviously a factor, and, you know, I'm not here to say one way or another whether that's good or whether that's bad, but it just changed things. So it's harder for the casual fan to connect a little bit more with prospects because of that.
All right, Spencer. The Cavaliers taking two players in the NBA draft last night out of Duke with the 49th pick, Tyrese Proctor, and then the draft and stash, Saliu Niang from Italy. Walk us through the Cavs' two second-round picks from last night.
Okay, so I would say I'm not an expert on either of them. Definitely know Tyrese Proctor a little bit more. Two or three years ago, this guy was a five-star recruit out of high school. And the fact that he came over from Australia to play at Duke, one of the most prestigious universities in the entire country, and as we know, one of the most amazing programs in college basketball, just with Coach K and then obviously John Shire taking over, you know that that has to signify the kind of talent that Tyrese Proctor is. At that time, he was projected to be a first-round pick over that time. But then, obviously, you get a Duke and you play with a ton of talent, but to me what speaks to Tyrese's abilities is that he was in a starting lineup in which all five guys this year were drafted. And I think that is not anything to scoff at. You obviously have Cooper Flagg, the number one overall pick, going to Dallas. Tom Knepel going over to the Charlotte Hornets, Kaman Malawak over to Phoenix, and then Sion James early in the second round going to the Hornets as well. So I think that's nothing to scoff at, the fact that he's able to play with talents like that and to have obviously played alongside other NBA talents in his career at Duke. And staying at one school, I think, is really attractive to the Cavs. I know that Mike Gansey, their GM, was talking a lot about on and off the ball, how he's been able to play multiple different roles, and the fact that he can shoot the ball, and he's had a steadily increasing jump shot from beyond the arc, 32% to 35% to 40%. And then obviously the size, 6'5", probably still growing too, and has some length to him. I know he's not as big as you would think, but Matt Gansey did say that he added 10 to 11 pounds when they went to go see him for his pro day. So they believe that this is a prospect who has already plenty of development going in, so it's not a completely from scratch thing, but there's also still upside there to be coached, and that's Kenny Atkinson's specialty. So the fact that he already is going to have a guaranteed roster spot speaks volumes, I think, to what they think of him, and the fact that he's going to be a part of this team and the big club right off the bat.
What'd you make of the fact that they really went after, you know, two guards instead of doing anything as far as the big men are concerned?
Well, I think that with the big men, it would be really hard to find somebody that would play now at 49 or at 58, for that matter. I also think that it's just probably something in the back of their minds to where maybe they have a move already in mind when it comes to the backup five. And they do believe a lot in Dean Wade, but I know that Dean Wade and Isaac Okoro, those guys are definitely some players that they might be looking to listen to calls on. So those are also things that come to mind, I think. And I don't think that a rookie in the late second round is going to be somebody that's going to contribute right away as a backup big. I feel like between Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and Dean Wade for now, you've got enough there. And I'm sure that Kenny Atkinson will have his kind of tweaks in there too to figure out what's best for that front court. But yeah, at 49 and 58, I don't see a big man being right into the rotation right away like something like Tyrese Proctor. And to just kind of go a little bit against that point too, I feel like Salu Niang, even if we don't see him at all, he is definitely a forward. He's a small forward / power forward, rail thin, but he's, you know, 6'7", and he's got a lot of length to him.
Spencer Davies on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we're not quite halfway through the offseason, but with free agency coming up on Monday, this is where things start to happen. If you had to guess which way the Cavs go, minor move, no move at all, major move, where do you think they end up going over the next 2 weeks?
I don't think they really do much at all. They've got to figure out what's going on with Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill first and foremost. I'd probably be surprised if they brought back both. If you were to ask me, I think that it would be more likely if, you know, Ty Jerome came back than Sam Merrill, because I think Sam Merrill is going to, you know, be making upwards to $7 to $8 million somewhere else. Ty Jerome, though, could also have suitors. Like, Ty is definitely the ball handler they need. It is somebody that can facilitate and can organize an offense, but a lot of teams need that too. So there's going to be some competition for Ty Jerome, in my opinion. So those two is really the main focus, I think, for the Cavs. Yes, again, I go back to listening for offers on guys like Isaac Okoro and Dean Wade, I think would be really advantageous, especially knowing the second apron restrictions that come into play. If they were to sign and trade one of Ty Jerome or Sam Merrill, I know that they would not be able to get players back. They would only be able to get picks back. So that's also something that hampers them a little bit. Only minimum contracts are really what they're able to go after. So they're limited in what they can do. But I still think that we're glossing over the fact that they went out and acquired DeAndre Hunter at the trade deadline. And that happened only a few months ago. And he's going to have an entire training camp with this team, an entire summer with this team to really get to know him. And also for Kenny Atkinson to get into the lab and see, hey, maybe we throw him in the starting lineup. Hey, maybe we throw him at the four or at the five, because he's got so much length and ability on both ends of the floor. So I feel like that would be the biggest acquisition they could have made, was at the trade deadline, more than what they can do this summer, obviously, because of what they are restricted by with the second apron.
Yeah, how do you think DeAndre's role is going to change from last year to this year?
That's a really good question. I think last year, the fact that he came in mid-season, they did not want to mess with what he had going on. He was really good off the bench for Atlanta and was doing some really good stuff as far as creating his own shot with the Cavs, which we didn't see much with in Atlanta. I think that his jumper was in really good shape. And defensively, I still think there's a little bit more we can see from DeAndre Hunter. He covers a ton of ground, but I would like to see him, you know, move his feet a little bit more, maybe get more active on the defensive glass especially. I think that Kenny will look to ways to put him in better positions to be successful there. But I think that just involving him offensively, I don't think that this is a role-playing type of player. I think DeAndre Hunter is definitely somebody who can be a sort of core player for the Cavs. I think that he's that good, and he's still got a little bit of room to develop yet. And I feel like he contributed a lot last year, and it's unfortunate that he had the thumb injury in the playoffs that really took him off his game. And this guy is the wing that I feel like Cavs fans have been searching for all these years, and they just all of a sudden forgot that he's there. So I have a lot of high hopes for DeAndre Hunter, and I think a lineup with him and Evan and maybe a bigger forward like a Dean Wade, if he's still around, can really do a lot of damage. And I think that having that takes a lot of pressure off guys like Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell because, you know, DeAndre can do stuff for himself.
Spencer, the Cavs have quite a few young players, none of whom were really in the rotation of the playoffs, but Craig Porter Jr., Naquan Tomlin, Isaac is still here, but we'll see about that. But Luke Travers, Jalen Tyson, Amani Bates, Proctor. Of those young guys, who do you think has a chance to take this offseason program, the first time they've had one with Kenny Atkinson, and maybe force their way into the rotation and maybe becoming that one or two of the missing pieces next year?
I think CP, Craig Porter Jr., and Jalen Tyson have kind of that grandfathered in role. Just based on where they've been and how much work they've put in. Craig Porter Jr., first of all, I think should have gotten at least some run in the playoffs against Indiana when Ty Jerome was struggling. I still don't understand why he didn't. I think he would have brought a toughness factor. He would have definitely gotten you on the glass in those hustle plays. And he's able to create for himself, but he's able to touch the paint. And I think that we saw that first year with Craig Porter Jr., that he is not afraid of anyone. He attacked Joel Embiid's straight baseline drive in that amazing game against Philadelphia as a rookie in those closing moments. I think that those are things that show you that he's ready for that next step and that next, you know, responsibility. And I feel like he's earned that. You know, he's gone from Exhibit 10 to two-way to all the way to the big club. So that's certainly admirable. And with Jalen Tyson, they drafted this guy last year knowing that he was going to have that Josh Hart type of role. He's going to be the hustle guy, keep possessions alive, and whatever you get on the offensive end is a bonus. And, you know, he's got a little bit more size, got a little bit more length. He can definitely defend the way that we watched him play last year in his limited time. Was really effective, I think. He's got a long ways to go with the jump shot, I think, yet. But I feel like he's definitely a rotational type player that they can have. The two-way situation I'm really interested in. So the only guy they have right now on contract is Naquan Tomlin, and that's the only two-way contract they have. Amani Bates and Luke Travers, that's up in the air yet. They're trying to figure that out and iron that detail out. Amani, I know, would, if he got the two-way contract again this year, this would be his last year to be eligible for a two-way contract with the Cavs. So that's an interesting thing. And obviously, Luke Travers, he has been on the outside looking in as well, and he had some injury trouble. Same with Amani last year, so it doesn't really help their cases. But we'll see what happens here in the coming week or so and figure it out what the summer league roster looks like and then obviously what the two-way situation is.
Spencer, away from the Cavs, what is your most interesting just storyline for the offseason?
Ooh, storyline. Interesting. I think... is this from the draft or just in general?
No, just in general. Like, what are you excited to see play out? Could be a coaching search, could be a player on the move from one team to another.
Okay. I think, one, New York figuring out who they're going to hire as their head coach. I think, you know, obviously the East is a little bit more open, as everybody's been saying. I still wouldn't count out no matter what, Boston's got a great culture. I know that they just traded away Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, and they had to get under the apron. But I don't foresee them taking a huge drop like everyone's predicting. You know, Indiana, seeing what they do in response to Halliburton not having, you know, a healthy body and having that Achilles injury, terrible, terrible timing. And then Milwaukee, you know, obviously everybody looking at the Giannis situation, whether he's going to stay, whether he's going to go. And it sucks, too, there that Damian Lillard's got the Achilles injury. He's got three Achilles injuries in the postseason. Just got awful. But, yeah, I guess just to see how the East takes shape. I'm really intrigued by Orlando and Detroit. I think they are definitely there to take their next steps and what they have going on. So I don't see this as something where the Cavs have just this easy road to get right back at the top of the East again and try to cruise through the playoffs. They're going to have competition no matter what it looks like on paper.
Spencer, always great to talk with you. What a guy. I mean, just a hell of a guy.
Spencer, you better answer
you
this.
Got
in like
some,
the,
I mean, you're such a that's a person. What a
just
person.
For my
we're
own sanity, will you just be like,
and,
thank you, Nick, so
you know,
much
your
speaking to me this way.
In this business is so incredibly
what a
bright.
Mensch you are, that Nick Wilson.
One day you're going to get married and have a beautiful family. I mean, the world is your oyster, Spencer. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Nick. And thank you, JP, for this amazing appearance. I truly appreciate it. And I can't wait to get back on.
That's good. Really good. That nice. That's exactly what we're looking for. Great stuff, buddy.
Later, guys.
Spencer Davies there. Cavs on SI. Also Babcock Hoops and more on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He really nailed it.
Well, I mean, he fell short of saying he loves us.
It's true.
You know, when you tell nicer. Us that you love us, that's it goes a long way,
that's
right,
true.
Nick Shook?
And then we're like, hey, we love you too.
And that's exactly how that goes.
It's people promoting people. It's people, positive people. That's what we are.
The old triple P.
We'll react to Spencer Davies in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.